Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Boat Briefing Podcast.
This week's episode is sponsored by KBH, the service which creates innovative connectivity solutions for customers on sea, land, and air around the globe. KBH is a global leader in mobile connectivity, content, and value-added services with technology designed to enable a mobile world and keep mariners always connected. To find out more, visit www.kbh.com.
Beautifully said, Katya. It's great to see you back in the podcast studio. It's been a while since I've been here myself.
Yeah, I almost didn't recognise you when you came into the office the other day.
Was it the tan?
No, it was. I think it was the backpack, actually.
You said no very, very quickly.
It's because I was looking at you coming into the office. I was like, who's that man with a backpack? It's Stuart. It's our illustrious leader returned to the office after 6 weeks?
Yeah, it was a hell of a trip. So I did fail to pick up a tan, although I got more freckles. My kids said picked up a few more freckles, which from a distance, if you've got bad eyesight, sort of can make you look like you've got a tan.
Okay. Is that what you're telling yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
And cool. My eyesight's getting bad, so I stand way back from a mirror.
And you've got a kind of bronze
glow. Think, oh my God, look at the tanned Adonis over there. Then I get closer and the reality dawns.
Okay. So in which places did you receive all these freckles, Stuart?
Well, it all started at the start of March when I went down to Australia. And the reason I went to Australia was because we were partnering with an event called the Superyacht Soiree, which was organized by Superyacht Australia. So this is a gambit of theirs to introduce that kind of moneyed Sydney crowd, people who wouldn't necessarily know much about superyacht charter or superyachts generally, kind of introduce them to the world of charter. So they had a record number of boats there down at Jones Bay Wharf, which is this beautiful kind of old Sydney wharf. A lot of those old wharves in Sydney have been done up now. They are very flash indeed, and Jones Bay is one of them. And it was just a kind of a 5 or 6 hour introduction to charter. People were free to wander on and off the boats. There was food and cocktails and wine available. And we were, the media partner, I suppose, of that event. And we've covered it in the latest issue of the magazine. And for me, it was just interesting to interact more closely with Superyacht Australia, because we're forging closer ties with these big organizations down in Australia and New Zealand. So it was great to be down there with those guys and see what that event was all about.
Yeah, well, it's a rich market down there, a rich untapped market of great cruising grounds, plenty of people who are going to be interested in chartering or even ownership. And you've also got a lot of exploration, right? Because you've got Fiji and kind of Papua New Guinea in that area, right?
Yeah, it is. Well, Sydney's a great launch pad for that kind of stuff. So Sydney, New Zealand, and then out into the South Pacific. I mean, it's fantastic cruising. And so I did a bit of cruising around Sydney Harbour on a lovely large Sunseeker, which is good. And then I flew over to New Zealand. There was an event quite handily happening a few days later in Auckland, on Waiheke Island, actually, just off Auckland, called the Long Lunch. It was organized by Linda Berry, who puts together the Superyacht Gathering each year. So this kind of collective of the New Zealand superyacht industry, we gathered for lunch, and I did a little data presentation talking about, in fact, I'd made a massive faux pas. So what I didn't realize when I was giving this data presentation all about the state of the superyacht industry was that we had a world map of superyacht activity. And as this map came up on the screen, there were some murmurs from the back of the room, and I didn't quite appreciate later they were murmuring for good reason, because I had managed to leave New Zealand off this map.
Stuart! And
I just wanted a hole to open up. Everyone was very good about it.
Did you realize afterwards or during?
Afterwards.
If you realised during, they're probably worse, because that would have really thrown you off your stride. But
the Kiwis are very sensitive about this, because they are often wrongly left off maps of the world. The edge of the world kind of ends at the east coast of Australia, and New Zealand's often forgotten. So I am another guilty party in that long, sorry tradition of morons who haven't properly looked at the bloody map. So huge apologies to everyone listening from New Zealand. I am guilty as charged. And there's just...
no excuse for that, really, is
no
there?
No excuse whatsoever.
No. But the super activity in New Zealand, are people building out there, or are they being left off the map so much that no one remembers they can build down there?
Well, that's what struck me when I was there. So the New Zealand dollar is not particularly strong at the moment. A pound buys you two New Zealand dollars. And so the last time the New Zealand dollar was particularly weak, there was quite a lot of super activity. The great years of Alloy Yachts and Fitzroy. Was a lot of a result of a lot of European buyers going down there and building fantastic quality boats, but at a very good value. A lot of those yards, obviously Fitzroy and Alloy, are no more, which is a great tragedy. But with £1 buying two New Zealand dollars, if I was looking to commission a yacht in the kind of 30 to 50 meter range, I would be scouting around New Zealand, because obviously the Beast was built at a commercial yard, and Yachting Developments is very busy, and there's some other shipyards down there that could do the work. So, you know, I would be seriously looking, because the Kiwis build amazing boats, as we all know, and if you can get it at a 15% discount on what you might get it for in Europe, you get to travel to a beautiful part of the world.
Sure.
And build a fantastic boat.
Yeah. And they're mostly known for sailing yachts. I know you mentioned the Beast, but Alloy and Fitzroy?
Fitzroy, yeah.
They're sailing yacht specialists, right?
Yeah, well, Alloy did some motor yachts.
Did they?
They built a boat called Hey Jude, which is often seen on Sydney Harbour.
Oh, nice.
A beautiful boat. But I loved being in Auckland, and I went up to the Bay of Islands for a few days as well, and spent a few days cruising around there, and that is a very, very special place indeed. But you kind of fall in love with the place every time you go there. Every time I'm there, I think, why don't I live here or in this part of the world?
Okay, great.
Go. This is fine.
I'll take the spot over here.
Catch it. Like, leave.
Okay. So lots of sailing for you. And then you also were sailing in St. Barts as well, right?
Yeah. So from Auckland, I flew to the States and then down to St. Barts for the Bucket. So we do an event a few days before the Bucket kicks off at this beautiful ocean club in Gustavia. This amazing kind of restaurant terrace, and it's spectacular as the sun sets, the sky lights up, and it's golden. That kind of kicks off a long run of St. Bart's events, and the sailing started. That was on the Tuesday. I think the sailing started on the Friday. So I was really lucky this year. I sailed on Naku Penda, the big Perini Rose Harty, and the Vianara, which was, of course, built by Pendennis. Three spectacular boats.
Naku Penda, she's won a couple of regattas, hasn't she, in the past?
She won the Bucket last year. So it was great to experience. And that is such a sorted team on that boat.
Yeah.
They know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly how to push the boat and when to kind of pull back a bit. It was really, all those boats, actually. And, Rose Harty, it was, rock stars on that boat. And it's with vastly more sailing knowledge than me. So it's, for me, just watching them operate and speak to each other, and the tactics they call and the line they take, and inside the outside of the island, there was some, amazing.
Yeah. Did you pick up some good team management tactics that you can bring into the office, maybe?
The only thing I'm getting slightly better at is calling the wind. You know, when you're sailing in a regatta and, breeze on in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And I used to think, what are you talking about, breeze on? How could you possibly tell it's going to get a bit gustier in 5 seconds or even 10 seconds out? But then, sitting with these guys and watching them do it, and you see the little ruffle on the water, and
you see
the boats ahead bending. So, there's these little signs, little cues you pick up. So I've got a mildly better.
Okay. It's handy for the office.
Bit of lifting breeze. Yeah, no, that's going to be...
I was talking about communication skills that you could bring back.
No, they're as bad as ever. Okay. I'm afraid.
Great. Okay. And so you were at the bucket, and that means that you missed Palm Beach, right?
Yeah, missed Palm Beach. I hear it was great.
Yeah, good fun. A bit rainy on a couple of days.
Yeah, the weather was a challenge, right? We had to cancel an event.
You did, yeah. Yeah, but it was a great show overall. Really, really smashing in terms of quality of clients. And I mean, regular podcast listeners have already heard this spiel. But no, it's a good one. And then where did you go?
I came back from St. Bart's. I was in the office on one day. Then I went back to Australia. But that was with family. So that was a lot of my family live in Australia. So. Mm. Good family time down there, but the kids are a bit like you, really. Why aren't you moving to Australia? Why aren't we moving to Australia? but this is my first week back for quite a long time, but I feel it. I tell you what, you get older. I mean, you're still a whippersnapper, but when you get to my grand old age, I tell you, these long haul flights, they wipe you out.
Yeah.
For kind of a week afterwards, really struggling. I need some Botox. Yeah.
Do you know what? I've long wanted a Botox fund. I've long been trying to pitch it to Toby and Tony. Actually, if there's any sponsors listening who want to get involved with Botox, we'll be all over it.
Yeah.
I already am all over it. This is why I don't look surprised at anything that you tell me. I can't move my forehead.
Well, I'll be front of the Botox queue, okay. Especially after flying from Australia.
Okay. But then it's about to get crazier, right? We're about to have even more on the calendar.
Yeah. So it's all a bit crazy. So the World Superyacht Awards, obviously, that's the big one. So that's happening in Venice on the 3rd to 4th of May. It's obviously been mentioned in the podcast previously. Grand celebration. You know, 400 or 500 people in Venice at the Arsenale. I'm not sure I'm allowed to reveal that it's at the Arsenale, but it's a bit late for that. So it's at the Arsenale. It's going to be spectacular. Venice is going to be lit up for us. I can't wait. There's an event in the States. And then after that, but then there's the golf event at Cameral on the 15th and 16th of May. So Cameral is this amazing wellness resort and golf resort near Barcelona. It's about an hour outside Barcelona. So that's going to be a couple of really lovely days. And I think the Ryder Cup might be being held there a few years down the track.
Oh, nice.
But owned by a superyacht owner. It's spectacular. I was talking to Mr. Eddie Jordan about it just the other day. I'm not going to do his accent because it's impossible, but he said it's effing amazing. And I'm trying to get Eddie to play, actually. I'm working on him.
Oh, yeah? Is he a golfer?
His diary's even crazier than everyone else's here. Like, he loves his golf. He plays off about 12. But Marie, his wife, is almost a scratch golfer. She plays off 3. So he hates playing golf with his wife because she smashes him every time. Looking a bit further out, there's an event called the Cyclades Cup. So this is a new superyacht regatta taking place in Antiparos, Greece, from the 14th to the 16th of June. Sailing yachts over 30 meters are welcome. So this has been founded by one of our owners club members, Ilya Rigas, who owns the sailing yacht Almira 2, a lovely 50-meter long Perini.
50-meter Perini.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And we're the media partners for this.
We are the media partner, and we'll be doing a nice dinner on the first night.
Oh, lovely.
But great, it's fun. Yeah, and she's already got really good interest in it, actually. So if anyone listening is involved with a 30-meter and above sailing yacht and is in the Eastern Med or wants to journey to the Eastern Med this season and take part in a really, you know, cool, casual, you know, it's not kind of rock star racing, it's kind of friendly competition in Antiparos. Take advantage of those strong Greek breezes.
Absolutely.
It'll be a fantastic event. Just reach out to us. I think we can send you some more information.
Yeah, good to see us getting involved in Greece, because that's a huge, again, another really big market, really great cruising grounds. And the Cyclades is obviously home to all the big Santorini, Mykonos is all over there, right?
It is. It is. And actually, well, a bunch of the team are heading out there this weekend. So I can't get my head around what's going on at the moment. So the Palmer Yacht Show kicks off tomorrow.
Tomorrow, but we've already got our team member, Gabby Lazaridis, our business editor. She's out there now, sea trialing with Axopar and Brabus. So she's having a great time out there. And then this weekend, it's Medis, so the Mediterranean Yacht Show in Greece. And that's the Greek fleet. So basically, yachts that specifically charter in Greece, obviously you need to have a Greek charter license to charter out there, so it's a bit different. And then we've got Adam and Georgia, our travel and charter editor, doing that. And then Georgia's actually having a really busy week because she's also at the MIBA show, which this year is back in Genoa. Exactly. Yeah. With more yachts than in years past, according to a recent Boat Pro article that I read. Really big, strong fleet of boats out in Genoa this year. And then it's Tiba.
That's the Turkish one.
Yeah.
Is that immediately after Medis?
That's immediately after Medis, I believe, yeah. Or maybe even an overlap, I'm not 100% sure. But we're really getting into boat show season now. It's really
I know, but it seems madder than usual.
You're right. I think there's been changes in the dates this year, and they've all kind of come into 1 week, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sure Palmer never used to overlap with MIBA.
No.
But I mean, it's great. It's great for us. We've got a lot of people on the move. We've got a lot of people at boat shows. If you see us and our team there, please do stop us and say hello.
Yeah, do. We've got people everywhere.
Yeah.
It's really hard to keep track. I don't even try.
No,
so.
I know you don't.
But you've been on the road a lot as well, haven't you?
I have. Yeah. So I was in the Netherlands, and then Italy, and then Poland. So it was about 6 shipyards, 7 flights, and at my last calculation, about 14 yachts that I saw or went on board. So I'm pretty yachted out at this moment in time. But I never
thought I'd hear the yacht writer say that.
But you know what? It's because
how disappointing.
Okay, I'm not quite yachted out, but I'll tell you what. I didn't just see yachts. I did some bits. So I got to see how generators are made. And I got to see how all the parts are made, like lighting and the tubes that go into the sinks and stuff, which was quite different for me. But it was interesting. I noticed
that didn't make the yacht writer
account.
It did.
What are you talking about? You're not watching hard enough. Yeah, of course. Because you know what? It's the kind of thing that, okay, it's a little bit dry when you're hearing about it, but how many other people get to see that really technical side to things?
Yeah, true.
I'm not sure if it'll come in useful, but look, I know now. I can tell you. I can talk to you about it. I listened to it for about 3 hours. The generator talk. So I'm all clued up on that. But I was also over in Poland, and that was one of the real highlights for me. So I was on board with the owner on board Extra Time, which is the 44-meter second hull in the Conrad series, the C144S, and the first hull is obviously Ace. So the owner, it was his first time being on board ever. So the last time he'd seen the boat, it was like an empty shell in Poland, in Gdansk. And we went for a cruise around the bay in Gdansk. It was me, the owner, and all the Conrad staff. And the owner was like going around the boat, inspecting everything. So like fiddling with things, touching things. And you can see the shipyard staff are just like lightly sweating, watching him go around, pouring over every detail of this boat. But
that's pretty brave of him also to invite, I mean, the world's marine press was there as well,
but
right?
But it was actually just me. I was the only person that got to the sea trial. So I felt really special, actually. And I did manage to sit down with the owner and have a little, a brief interview with him. And he said that everything at Conrad had absolutely exceeded expectations. He was so happy with the boat. He actually got a little bit emotional talking about how he was so excited to take his kids out and see the world. And his daughter was there with him, and they did like a little christening ceremony in Polish and in English. It was really wholesome, actually. It was very, like, you know, Conrad, small shipyard, but very, well, not small, but you know what I mean? They haven't built that many boats yet, but it still feels very family orientated and quite casual for a christening ceremony. But that was really, really nice.
Yeah, what a great experience.
Yeah, I had some other good experiences as well. Did you see I was on an in-build super yacht with Heesin?
Yeah, I think I caught that on the socials.
That was absolutely insane. Literally dinner on board the sun deck of Project Venus.
In-build boat.
Yeah.
So just bare metal?
I think it was a step up from just the shell, but it was pretty, you know, pretty rugged, not rugged, you know, rough and ready. It was great fun. I had such a good time.
You didn't get any iron filings in your soup, did you?
No, nothing like that.
Okay, that's good.
But it's quite impressive doing that kind of like a three-course dining experience. You know, all the journalists are walking up the scaffolding on the boat, all the wait staff are having to come up to serve us right at the top. It was really, really very well done by Heeson. And obviously Sophia was there as well. Sophia of this parish.
Formerly of this parish.
Exactly. So yeah, I had a lovely week.
That does sound good, actually. How many yachts? 14.
14. And I was so tired that yesterday I got home from work and I fell asleep in my full like work clothes and makeup. I just kind of lay down for 1 second. I was like, I'll close my eyes. And then, yeah, I just ended up, you know, waking up in the morning. I had a day off yesterday, so I was allowed.
Slacking. Terrible. Before we get onto the brokerage picks, I just need to mention also some housekeeping. So we're currently working with Hill Robinson on something we're called the Big Boat Management Survey. So this is basically seeking your insights into the good, the bad, and the ugly of super yacht management. So it only takes a few minutes of your time to complete the survey, and all responses will be kept very confidential. And the results will be used, obviously, to provide a better service to yacht owners. Plus, for every survey answered, one seagrass plant will be planted by Project Seagrass. It's good, isn't it? So seagrass is hugely important, obviously, for capturing carbon, but also seahorses. It's a seahorse habitat.
Right, okay.
And who doesn't love seahorses?
Indeed, those little seahorses. Saving the seahorses.
Save the seahorses.
One survey at a time.
So do a survey, save a seahorse.
Very good.
Yeah, that's what we should have called it.
That's exactly, that should have been the tagline.
How about we talk brokerage picks?
Yep. Do you want to kick us off?
No, you go.
All right, okay.
Because I went down a massive rabbit hole with mine.
Okay,
so
fine.
You go first.
Okay. Actually, I did too. Okay. So enjoy, dear listener. So my pick is a 38-metre 2011 build called Tommy Bell, and she was built by a German shipyard called Lübeck. Have you heard of them?
No.
So I'm not sure if they're still in existence, but she's asking a very reasonable 6.9 million euros with IYC, and this is following a refit and an extension earlier in 2023. So I actually took the liberty of going back and looking at my brokerage picks from the last few weeks. And let me tell you, there is no boat I've picked that is over 10 million euros. So the last time I did the pod, I picked a classic campers, and that was on for 1.25 million. Before that, it was a Fed ship in need of a bit of a rebuild, and she was asking 9 million. And before that, it was a sports yacht, which was asking 2.65 million. So it's got my brain whirring.
Cheap date.
No, I've got bigger plans than that, Stuart. I think I'm actually in the market to open a new type of brokerage firm.
Yeah.
Called either Bargain Boats or Catty's Cut Price Cruises.
I don't really like the second one.
The second one? Do you think Catty's Cut Price Cruises?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
I can see it on a big sign on the side of a motorway.
Yeah. I think I'd get a lot of business from that.
I think you would.
But that's actually not the reason I picked, going back to Tommy Bell, not the reason I picked this boat. It wasn't because she was cheap. I picked it, like I pick all my boats, is because they look a bit different. So this one, she's a little bit boxy, tiny bit chunky, almost looks a little bit like a Tansu, but like a little bit more elevated. So, you know, that kind of quite, you know, sharp, edgy lines, a bit military looking.
Okay.
But then also reading the article, it has two barbecues on the sun deck, which is brilliant. It's music to my ears. I love hot dogs. And with this, I could grill multiple hot dogs all at the same time. So
that's what everyone needs.
That's exactly what
How
I
many
think.
Hot dogs can one person eat? You need two barbecues.
Exactly. So Tommy Bell, very, very reasonably priced, as all the boats are in the Catty's Cut Price Cruises fleet. Not an ad.
I think Catch's already registered that URL, so don't go try buy it.
All right, what have you gone for?
Well, I've gone a bit more expensive. So I'm gone for the 63.7 metre Explorer Yacht Kupani, which is in the news because it has changed central agent. The boat is now listed with FGI Yacht Group asking $29.95 million. She's tough as nails, first and foremost, with that kind of classic big volume aft, long foredeck kind of look. And her hull is ice strengthened, so you got no worries there. Inside, it's very New York Yacht Club. It's kind of American cherry and stately and kind of library-esque, but very well done from the looks of the pictures. I haven't been on board, but she looks very well kept from the photos. But quite apart from the fact that she's a cool boat, she comes with plenty of know-how and pedigree. She was originally built as Turmoil, as a replacement for a 46-meter built by Palmer Johnson, also called Turmoil. So that's what I saw the rabbit hole yawning open in front of me, and I thought I'm just going to dive straight.
This is the moment
that
they said, "Cassie, can we push the podcast back by half an hour?"
Yeah, I'm tapping furiously. So that smaller Turmoil, the 46-meter, the predecessor of this bigger one, the smaller one is famous for being one of, if not the first super yacht to navigate through the Northwest Passage. And basically, this is all one long excuse to talk about the Northwest Passage.
Okay.
So according to the Scott Polar Research Institute, there have been 392 transits of the Northwest Passage in total ever to the end of the 2023 navigation season. So that's 229 westbound transits and 163 eastbound. So it's a pretty exclusive group. So the first people to traverse the Northwest Passage ever, the first traverse ever was in 1853. But it's not really counted as a full transit by sea because the team had to use sledges over sea ice in the Parry Channel. The first person to make the transit by sea alone was the famous Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen, who took on the passage in the 21-meter sloop Gjøa. I think I'm saying that right. Between 1903 and 1906, it took 3 years because they overwintered in periods, and then, you know, when the ice melted,
wow,
they carried on, then wintered, then carried on. So that was completed in 1906. The next transit wasn't until 1942. As far as I can make out from the records, the first private yacht to go through was the Ketch Willie War in 1977. And back in those days, it was maybe one, two boats a year going through. And by 2001, when the first Turmoil went through and did the transit, it was four or five boats a year. And there were smaller sailing yachts over 24 meters. But I mean, the first kind of big, proper, massive super yacht that went through was 46-meter Turmoil. And interestingly, the year before Turmoil went through, the 80-meter icebreaker Simon Fraser made the trip. So Simon Fraser is still, as far as I know, sitting as a shell, basically, at Benetti's shipyard in Livorno, waiting for someone to buy it and convert it into a super yacht. So if you wanted to steal Turmoil's crown, you could buy Simon Fraser, convert her, and then claim that you own the first super yacht to navigate the Northwest Passage.
Wow, that's a fully baked plan there.
Yeah, I've thought it through. So since Turmoil went through the first time, and she subsequently went through a second time, but since she went first in 2001, a bunch of other big yachts have gone through. Famously, Latitude, the 45-meter Timmerman, Apoise, the 73-meter Lursen, now known as Titania and owned by John Cordwell, Octopus, 126-meter Explorer, has gone through a couple of times, the converted Explorer Asteria, the sailing yacht Billy Budd, Galileo G, Akio. So there's plenty of big stuff's gone through since. But you look at the stats from the Scott Polar Research Institute, and the number of boats making the trip is rising almost exponentially. In 2023, so last year, some 40 boats made the trip. 40. 10 years ago, that number was 10. So the Northwest Passage is just growing and growing in popularity. A big polar hat tip, meanwhile, to the 122.5-meter long Russian icebreaker Kapitan, I hope I get this right, Klebnikov, which has been through 18 times. It is the most transited boat through the Northwest Passage. I'm saying it in a really awkward way. She's been through more times than anyone else, basically. Another interesting fact is that we don't know how many submarines have been through. Only two have been declared. But doubtless there have been more. But of course, those trips availed in secrecy. So the Northwest Passage.
So that was quite a tangent. And okay, I enjoyed that.
So this, and it's kind of, the timing's right because the ice is melting up there. People are thinking about making their trips through. I've spoken to a few owners who are thinking about going up there this year, this summer, for the season. So we'll see if 2024 sees even more than 40 boats going through. But the list is growing longer each and every year.
This might be a stupid question, but where does it connect? Where does that passage connect from and to?
Well, it depends which way you go. Either if you go, from the Atlantic to the Pacific or the Pacific to the Atlantic. And there's seven or so different routes through the Northwest Passage. So
you've there's different routes?
Yeah, because there's, thousands of islands up there. So you've got to just choose the one that's most suitable for your boat, timing, and also, ice conditions.
Okay, and so I guess one side ends in Russia, you end in Russian waters, and the other side ends in...
Yeah, so one end you kind of, you circle around the top of Alaska and kind of come around the corner. And then on the Atlantic side, you pop out into the Labrador Sea. But yeah.
Lovely.
Great trip.
Would be a good trip.
Bucket list.
So in all of this, I don't think you told us where Miss Kupani was built.
So Kupani was built by Royal Denship in 2006.
So it's a big motor yacht?
Big motor yacht, yeah. And very, very suitable for... a transit of the Northwest Passage.
Okay.
So that's a very long-winded way of saying, please buy, go buy Kupani. She's lovely. And she is my pick.
When she sells, you get a 5% discount just for this hard sell alone.
Just a little crew cabin down in the... when you're going through the... around the top of the world. That'd be very cool. Why don't we move on to some news? And why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, okay, so I'll start off with a really big story that broke yesterday, which is the Asset Recovery and Management Agency of Ukraine has announced that Dutch auction house...
Good luck with this one.
Troostwijk. Troostwijk.
Is my guess.
Troostwijk Auctions will be responsible for the sale of the 92.5-metre Royal Romance. So this, as you may recall, is the Russian-owned yacht that was seized back in 2022 when sanctions were introduced. And listen to this. So, quote, this is a huge victory. Royal Romance will be sold at a transparent auction and bring significant revenues to the budget of Ukraine, unquote. That's from the head of the Asset Recovery and Management Agency.
Well, when we hear about the date of the auction, I'll get my paddle.
Yeah. So there's one more aspect that needs to be confirmed, and then I guess we'll know the date when this is all going ahead.
Excellent. Meanwhile, over in neighbouring Germany, it's a busy time as ever. The 90-metre Royal Hausmann sailing yacht Athena has arrived at Lürssen's facilities in Hamburg for a substantial refit. She's joining another very large sailing yacht up there, 93-metre Eos. Both of these are amongst the largest sailing yachts in the world.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how Athena pops out the other end of that refit process.
Yeah. And good to see Lürssen really cornering both motor yacht and sailing yacht refits, right?
Yeah. Well, they do a spectacular job.
Eos is there. They built her originally, right? Eos is a Lürssen. And I think she was actually the largest sailing yacht in the world at the time of her launch.
I even think there was a bit of competition between... I remember I spoke to Jim Clark, the original owner of Athena.
Yeah, this rings a bell, actually.
Some years ago.
Mm.
And he heard on the grapevine whilst he was building Athena that someone was building something a little bit bigger, which he said didn't bother him.
Sure. All right. Okay. And I wanted to touch on an interesting feature that actually went live on the website recently. It's about Sol, which is a 24-metre sunreef power cap. And it's such a cool-looking boat. I'm sure you've probably seen her floating around the website.
Yeah. She's a great-looking boat.
So it's two hulls, obviously, and covered in solar panels, and it's completely gold, so already a total head-turner. But actually, that isn't even the most interesting thing about this boat. She's also really eco-minded. I know that Sunreef is generally very good at that kind of thing, but Sol really takes it to the next level. So there's no animal products on board, no leather, no fur, no wool, All the food that will be prepared on board is vegan, and even the bottom of the boat is finished in a special non-toxic paint, or so I'm told. And then, of course, there's also no fumes because it's solar panels. So I'll read you this excerpt from the feature. "One of the things I really don't miss about a diesel-powered yacht are the fumes," says the owner. "On this boat, we can sit out in the cockpit with the engines running, and one, it's completely quiet, and two, you don't get those fumes kicking right up in your face while you're trying to enjoy your morning coffee. It's such a better way to boat." Isn't that nice?
Can't argue with that.
Exactly.
So we'll just whip through a bit of data brought to you as ever by Boat Pro, the super industry's leading and award-winning market intelligence service. And Raphael, our data guru down there in the south of France, has dug out some stats about the Palmer Boat Show for us,
which indeed
kicks off tomorrow. We're recording this on Wednesday, starts on Thursday.
Exactly. And he's informed me under no uncertain terms that it'll probably, the fleet will probably grow as a couple more yachts come in at the last minute. But at the moment, there are, Stuart, take it away,
46 yachts we understand to be in attendance, with a total LOA of 1500, just over 1500 meters. So the average LOA of a boat at the Palmer Show is 33.1 meters, and an average, each boat has an average gross tonnage of 159. There are 21 motor yachts, 25 sailing yachts. That's interesting.
That is split, interesting, actually. Yeah. Yeah,
because it's probably the only boat show in the world, super yacht show, where sailing yachts outweigh motor yachts. 25 of the boats come from semi-custom series, and the average age of the of those 46 yachts is 21 years, which is actually a bit older than the average.
Yeah.
Older than the fleet average.
I think probably because it's a broker show, right? They've, yeah, got, they've got a big focus on brokerage these days.
So there'll be some good bargains to be had at the Palmer Show.
Yeah, that's where I get my marketing in, Stuart. And there are also some debuts, though. It's not all just older boats. So the Sunseek Ocean 182 will be there, I think. Should be a good one to see.
Yeah.
And probably some other boats that maybe haven't been seen down in Mallorca yet.
Yeah. So who's out at Palmer for us? Gabby's there now.
Gabby's there now.
And we've got a bunch of the commercial team are heading out there.
That's right, yep. And also, yeah, Lou from Boat Pro, if you're interested in digging more into this data, I'm sure she can assist.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was going to say I wish I was there, but I could do without another flight. So,
especially because we're off to Venice, you know, in a week's time.
Just over a week, yeah.
And actually next week's podcast will be a special episode, right?
Yeah, so it'll be next week's boat briefing will be released on Saturday evening, and we will be revealing on that podcast the winners of our much coveted World Super Yacht Awards.
Yeah.
So don't miss that one.
It's pre-recorded, guys. Don't worry, we won't be there at Saturday night.
Doing it live,
yeah,
from the ceremony.
After a few glasses of champagne.
That wouldn't go well. Alrighty. And that brings us to a close. Thank you very much for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Adam Geist and Naomi Wilson, and is a production of Boat International Media. Thank you, Katya.
Thank you very much, Stuart. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
See you next time.